Om namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Reading from Srimad Bhagavatam, Canto 2, Chapter 5, Text Number 20, The Cause of All Causes. Sa esha Bhagavalingais. Tribi eta adhoksaja. Salakshita gati brahman. Savisham amacheshvara. Saha, he, eshaha, this, bhagavan, the personality of Godhead, lingai, by the symptoms, tribhi, by three, etai, by all these, adokshaja, the superseer transcendence, sualakshita, veritably unseen. Gati, movement. Brahman, O Narada. Savarsham, of everyone. Mama, mine. Cha, also. So, as also. Ishvaraha, the controller. Translation and purport by His Divine Grace, A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami, Srila Prabhupada. Translation, O Brahma Narada, the superseer, the transcendent Lord, is beyond the perception of the material senses of the living entities because of the above-mentioned three modes of nature, but He is the controller of everyone, including me. Purport. In the Bhagavad Gita, Chapter 7, Text 24-25, the Lord has declared very clearly that the impersonalist who gives more importance to the transcendental rays of the Lord as Brahma Jyoti, and who concludes that the Absolute Truth is ultimately impersonal and only manifests a form at a time of necessity, is less intelligent than the personalist, however much the impersonalist may be engaged in studying the Vedanta. The fact is that such impersonalists are covered by the above-mentioned three modes of material nature. Therefore, they are unable to approach the transcendental personality of the Lord. The Lord is not approachable by everyone because He is curtained by His yogamaya potency. But one should not wrongly conclude that the Lord was formerly unmanifested and has now manifested Himself in the human form. This misconception of the formlessness of the Supreme Personality of Godhead is due to the yogamaya curtain of the Lord and can be removed only by the Supreme Will, as soon as the conditioned soul surrenders unto Him. The devotees of the Lord who are transcendental to the above mentioned three modes of material nature can see the all-blissful transcendental form of the Lord with their vision of love in the attitude of pure devotional service. Om Ajnana Timirandasya Ajnanjana Shalakaya Chakshumanitanyena Tasmai Shri Gurave Namaha. The conversation between Narada Muni and his guru continues, in which we're trying to understand the different modes of material nature, how Krishna is above and supreme these modes of material nature, but also how the living entity has a relationship with the modes in their conditioned state, but how Krishna eternally is always above the three modes of material nature, even when He touches the material energy in terms of creating through the different Purusha avatars. So, in the previous verse, we were hearing how behind material nature, behind the material cause, there's these three ways in which material nature functions: Adi Bhuta, Adi Atma, and Adi Deva. And this is similar to the conversation Krishna had with Arjuna, where Arjuna is asking about also these three, including, of course, Adi Yagya, where Arjuna says, Kim tad prama kim adi atman, kim kama purushottama, adi bhutam cham kim proktam, adi devam kim uchite. So Arjuna here was asking Krishna specifically the technicality of how the knowers of the field of action, who the super soul is, what is the controlling system and the material elements for repetition of birth and death, what is the Adiatma, what is spirit, and what is Brahman. Arjuna was also asking this, because in order to actually understand how Krishna is the Parabrahman, how he is the supreme, and how the living entity is also referred to as Brahman in terms of being part and parcel of the supreme Brahman, in order to actually understand Krishna's supremacy, we have to put these points into clarification. Otherwise, just as impersonals, they will start to think that there's no difference between ourselves and there's no difference between Krishna and the living entity. That if Krishna descends, he also takes on a material form. When Krishna passes away, he does so in a materialistic way, etc. So, in order for us to understand how Krishna is Krishna, by his own potency, always remains aloof from material energy, although he seems to associate it with it indirectly or even directly. Brahman, of course, the definition Prabhupada gives a lecture on the 7th chapter, a string of verses all the way up to the 8th chapter of the Bhagavad Gita, where he explains this conversation between Arjuna and Krishna. And he starts speaking about this, how it's important for us to understand what the meaning of Brahman is, Adiatma, Adibhuta, Adideva, etc., as it's being explained in the previous purport. So in the previous purport, Prabhupada is explaining how behind the material manifestation or material nature, there is Adibhuta, Adiatma, and Adideva actions, which the conditioned soul in the mode of ignorance cannot see. So the Adibhuta manifestations entails reputed birth and death with old age and disease, in which we're taking on different bodies. And the Adiatma manifestation conditions the spirit soul, so the Atma pertains to the body, the mind, and the living entity, the pure spirit soul. So when the pure spirit soul identifies with matter or with the body, there is also this conditioned state of existence that the living entity seemingly goes through. And the Adideva manifestation, of course, this is the controlling system that awards different pleasures, different ways of satisfaction or dissatisfaction to the living entity. So these three, they're the material manifestations of cause and effect in the material world, and the sense of responsibility, of course, of the conditioned actors. So these three, Prabhupada explains how they are, they're the machines, they're the three modes of material nature has three machines, which is passion, goodness, and ignorance. And by these three ways, and their manipulations and their interactions, the living entity is put into a state of ignorance where they are not able to understand the position of the Supreme Lord in their position. So, Srila Prabhupada explains how Brahman means indestructible and that which is eternal. Of course, Adiatma refers to the spirit soul, and Adibhuta, the material elements of repeated birth and death, Adideva, the controlling system, etc. So, it is important to understand that yes, Brahman is indestructible and it means or it refers to that which is eternal. So the living entity is also Brahman in this light. We are eternal and the soul is indestructible. That is the beginning phases, conversations in the Bhagavad Gita where Krishna explains the qualities of the spirit soul, that which is permanent. However, it is also, as I mentioned, important to understand that the Supreme Lord, he is the Supreme Brahman. And this is a point that the impersonalists, as Prabhupada explains, they cannot understand it, that Krishna is Parabrahman and he cannot come into the influence, subordination of these three modes of material nature because they are inferior to him. He is the actual controller, he's the supreme Ishvara, and all others are the servants of him. The material modes of nature are his servants. Time acts in a capacity to serve Krishna, who uses time in so many different ways. The demigods, they are functioning under Krishna. All yagyas are meant for the pleasure of Krishna. So everything is supremely offered to Krishna, which shows us that he is the Purushottama, he is the Supreme Person. So this distinction between Brahman and Parabrahman has to be there, otherwise we will equate the two and think that I am Brahman, you are Brahman, we are all Brahman. There is no distinction, but this distinction has to be made. So Srila Prabhupada mentions that the impersonalists say that Brahman is one. That is an illusion. How can Brahman be supreme and come into contact with matter? They say that if Krishna indeed is supreme, he comes into contact with matter, therefore that diminishes his potency. He becomes like one of us. He becomes illusioned. He becomes conditioned. He goes through the same thing because he comes into contact with matter. And they say that a supreme cannot be subordinate. That is their argument. However, they do not understand that yes, Krishna transcends in his, in his original transcendental form, that he does not assume a form that is made of matter. He assumes a human-like form, but Krishna is eternally Satchidananda Vigraha. He can never be in forgetfulness. And even if it looks like Krishna is in forgetfulness, it is by the arrangement of the internal potency, which is spirit by nature. It is never material. So Krishna, his tattva is supremely pure, just like the living entity. But Krishna never gets contaminated when he comes to the material sphere. So the impersonalists do not understand that this term in the Upanishads that explain nityo nichanam chaitanas chaitananam, that out of all the eternal living entities, Krishna is the chief amongst all these eternal living entities. Eko bhavanam yo viradati kaman, that he is the maintainer of all these living entities individually and collectively. That he is awarding everything to all these living entities in the limited material sphere and in the spiritual sky, which is the majority of the creation, three quarters of that creation. Krishna is maintaining all those living entities. So there is this one person, that is what makes him supreme, that is what makes him the Supreme Person. So at no time can we conclude that Krishna has a material form, or that he is supremely impersonal, that the absolute truth, the topmost understanding, is his impersonal form. We understand that yes, there are three types of transcendentalists, and one of them strive to understand and to merge into that Brahman effulgence. So there's different types actually of impersonalists. In the Chaitanya Charitamrita, there's a different description of different types of jnanis, different types of yogis, and there's these impersonalists, of course, who want liberation from the modes of material nature. Then there's those who take it further, who want to merge and become one with the Brahman itself. And there's those who want to become God themselves. So there's different grades of these types of impersonalists. However, their foundation is that the source of everything is impersonal. The absolute truth is understood as the impersonal. So Prabhupada explains in his purport that it is less intelligent for someone to actually think the absolute truth to be of an impersonal nature, and that he manifested a certain time and then he unmanifests at a certain time. The Lord was there before creation and he is there after the creation. When Lord Brahma himself was creating, he was getting guidance from a personalistic point of view. And there was someone above him before even his birth from the lotus stem. So that person was the Supreme Lord himself, who guided him and revealed the entire Vedic text in four verses, of course, and showed him the entire spiritual creation. So like this, the personalist understanding supersedes the impersonalist understanding. Of course, Krishna is then his features of Paramatma, Brahman realization, which are all partial forms of trying to, partial ways to try to understand the Supreme Lord. But it is not the absolute understanding. The absolute understanding is realizing, not only just understanding, but realizing that the Supreme Person is Bhagavan. He has his personality, he has his different shaktis, his different energies, Eko Bahu Shyam, that manifests, and depending on which department they work accordingly, whether it's the Shakti Avesh avatars, whether it's the Manvantaras or the Leela avatars, the Purusha avatars or the Guna avatars. So Krishna gives this potency to all different types of living entities. But the original person, of course, the source of everything, even according to Lord Brahma in the Brahma Samhita, it is Krishna. So the fact is that the impersonalists, of course, they are covered by the three modes of material nature. So these three modes of material nature, of course, they condition the living entity in such a way that it perpetuates repeated birth and death. So this controlling mentality or wanting to lord it over the material nature is what keeps the living entity bound, even in the mode of goodness. The mode of goodness, of course, it is better than the lower two, but it still binds one to these different types of miseries. So how the modes are working, of course, Prabhupada would often quote Prakriti Kriyamanani Gunakamani Savashaha Ahanka Vimudatma Khatamiti Manyate, that the living entity first of all thinks that he is the controller and he is the doer. Well, he thinks that by his existence he is controlling and manipulating everything by his own will, not taking into account the three modes of material nature, not taking into account who is facilitating the different desires, the manifestations of desires, who's facilitating the different elements that come into being, which takes us back to creation in such a way that we understand where all these different energies are coming from. They're not coming from the living entity. They're not necessarily coming from gross or subtle matter. The intrinsic value of even the material elements is that the Lord gives these material elements potency. So without the glance of the Lord, even the gross and subtle elements cannot become activated. So it is Krishna who is actually directing the different modes of material nature to act, directing all the material elements to come into existence. Nothing is done independent of Krishna, even within the material creation. So contacting any of these three modes of material nature actually binds the living entity, even in this mode of goodness, because we find so many persons, well, in the society we live in today, people like philosophers or scientists, etc., are seen to be in the mode of goodness. They are seen to be gyanis, right? They have some type of knowledge. But even with that type of knowledge, the living entity becomes conditioned by the discoveries, by the paraphernalia that they create. So this materialistic ego, or the sense of identification with matter, whether it's in its gross form or in a subtle, self-centered form, it is devoid of clear knowledge and the existence of God. That is why we find, in a general scheme of things, most scientists will not really accept the existence of God, because the materialistic ego, the self-centeredness of the materialistic ego, becomes transformed into the mode of goodness, passion or ignorance, etc. And these powers evolve matter, they evolve knowledge and material creation. So when one is inflicted by such a state of existence, it is very difficult to see Krishna in a personalistic way. It is very difficult for one to accept the supremacy of one Supreme Personality, Therefore, it becomes easy to equate everything. That I am Brahman, you are Brahman, we are all Brahman. So it is a very easy way for the materialistic person. So Prabhupada in the purport to the verse 24 through 27 of the Bhagavad Gita, chapter 7, explains how the self-centered impersonalist without a clear conception of the personality of Godhead concludes in his own way that the personality of Godhead takes the material shape from his original impersonal spiritual existence for a particular mission. That is why when impersonalists read in the Bhagavad Gita Anta Kalechamamevam, or when they read Yari Arihi Dhammasya Adlani Bhavati Bharata, when Krishna comes for the reasons, you know, for the, whether it's primary or secondary reasons for creation or annihilating demons, etc., or for pastime with his devotees, they see him in a very materialistic point of way. They don't see him that he's descending in his original transcendental form. They think now he's assuming a material shape. Now he's being transformed into a human being. So it's very similar to ourselves. Therefore, he is not supreme. He might have wonderful powers, but he is not supreme. So this misleading conception by this impersonalist mentality continues even at a point, even though they are studying Vedanta. What for most people, it is very impressive that they study the Vedas so rigidly. We might think, yes, we are convinced by these impersonalistic arguments because they have so much knowledge. But even less knowledge is binding them into a very limited scope of the absolute truth. The Prabhupada makes a very interesting point. He says, the ignorance of the personal feature of the Lord is due simply to ignorance of the mixture of different modes. So it is quite a powerful point that because we are not able to conceive or understand how these modes are working, whatever judgments we have from our very, very small understanding of the modes of material nature will make us see or will make us understand the absolute truth in a certain type of way. So if you don't understand that even the mode of goodness is limiting or binding, or the mode of passion doesn't necessarily result in eternal long-lasting pleasure, we won't really understand how the interaction of the modes happen. We won't understand how we are getting implicated. We won't understand how Krishna himself is aloof and above these three modes of material nature, because we do not understand how they mix. Sometimes the mode of goodness is prominent. Very rarely the mode of goodness is prominent in today's society. The modes are always in competition. But if you do not understand the workings of the modes of material nature, how this happens in the different desires, how the modes of material nature manifest in the type of happiness we look for in knowledge, in determination, in charity, in so many different avenues, if you do not understand how the modes interact, we are actually in ignorance, as Prabhupada says. Ignorance means we do not understand how these three modes of material nature are working. We'll think that the mode of goodness is a supremely, we'll put it on a pedestal so much so that we'll think that anyone who's in the mode of goodness is God. And therefore, when we speak of transcendental knowledge, or when we speak of the Lord being in a transcendental position, it is not, we cannot actually perceive that because we're so limited by our three modes of material nature. Our vision is covered by that. Our senses are produced for us to live a certain type of way, influenced primarily by a certain type of modes. So material nature provides for us a certain type of body because we're influenced by a certain type of mode of existence, whether it's in the animal species, the tree species, in the human form, there's a certain type of mode pushing us. Like, we're very different from trees, we're very different from bears. You know, bears can just sleep all day. There's a certain type of bear, I can't remember what it's called. Bears hibernate, I think, for 6 months. Not a polar bear, there's another type of one. Grizzly bear. Grizzly bear. I can't remember. But, you know, we can't sleep for 6 months. Now that is really, that's heavy, heavy ignorance. Right, so, but the body of some animals, for them it is normal to be able to sleep for 6 months. We, the most, of course, if you're really tired, we can sleep for 8 hours, 10 hours, or 12 hours. Some people sleep for 12 hours after nights of intoxication. But more than that, every single day, the human body is not meant to sleep like a bear. We're ruled more by passion. We want to do things. We want to get pleasure. We want to give pleasure. We want to do so many types of things that require us to have desires, to have a fruitive mentality. And it's very different for trees and the birds and the insects. Of course, they also have their passionate ways, but they might be ruled by a different type of mode. So, the reason why, you know, the modes of material nature have a thankless task for actually covering the vision and understanding the vision, the intelligence of the living entity, because they are under the control or jurisdiction of the Lord, and the Lord reserves the right of not exposing himself to the non-devotee. It is actually the Lord's potency that reveals the Lord to the living entity. The Lord doesn't just, of course, the Lord is so magnanimous that through his holy name, through prasadam, he allows himself to be contacted by those who wouldn't ordinarily approach him. But when we actually want to be in union, when we want to be in a real, in our original relationship with the Lord, he reserves the right not to expose himself because of a lack of qualification. And the end of the purport, Srila Prabhupada, explains how the living entity can transcend the three modes of material nature. Srila Prabhupada explained that the devotees of the Lord who are transcendental, they transcend these modes of material nature by their vision of love in the attitude of devotional service. So it is by the attitude of devotional service that we're able to transcend these three modes of material nature by proper understanding. Right, by understanding how ignorance is produced by these different mixtures of the modes of material nature, by understanding our constitutional position that we are Brahman, we are eternal by nature, and we're meant to serve the Parabrahman. With that understanding and with an aptitude of devotion, we are able to actually understand Krishna in full, not partially, in full. So this ability for the Lord not to be able to reveal himself just to anyone is a service done by the Yoga Maya potency. Now the Yoga Maya potency, of course, acts in the material world under the Mahamaya Shakti, which covers and dulls the living entity until the living entity has the desire to actually come out of being shackled by these three modes of material nature. So perfect knowledge, of course, means knowing that Krishna is that root of Brahman, not that because everything is Brahman, then we're all Brahman, there's no supreme one, but there is a supreme Brahman. So the argument that the Lord takes a material shape from his original impersonal feature means that he is born, and it means that he's changeable. But we understand that the Lord, eternal form, is already existing. The Lord doesn't have to be born in a material way. He takes on a human-like form, but it doesn't mean he's a human to the core, like the conditioned soul, when the conditioned soul takes on material body. Krishna's form is, as Bala Gopal, it's already eternal. Krishna's form as Nrisingadev, it is eternal, it is pure, it is transcendental. Krishna's Swayam Bhagavan form, his two arm bending, his two hands, that form, it is an eternal form. His Narayan form, it is an eternal form. So Krishna's form It is not manifesting at one time and unmanifesting. Of course, his pastimes are only visible to those who have the spiritual vision. They are going on eternally. However, it is only by those who have a smearing of the palpable love of Godhead who can actually understand the transcendental form of Krishna. The conditioned soul, of course, we take a form birth after birth due to our condition to matter. Krishna is not appearing in the material because he's conditioned by matter. Krishna is appearing here to have fun. Krishna is here to show his pastimes. He's here to annihilate the miscreants and to attract living entities by his pastimes. That is why Krishna comes. So the cause of such ignorance, whether it's those who call themselves impersonalists or those who are just living in blank ignorance, is our engagement in constant material demands and material desires. This perpetuates these cycles. So this way of living artificially increases demands of the body, demands of the mind, demands of the tongue, demands of the everything. So when we engage in materialistic activities, it is very difficult for us to even conceive or perceive of an absolute reality. This was mentioned in the beginning text when we're hearing about the first step in God realization, when we're hearing about the Virat form, how this is a way that the Lord awards favor to those who are very conditioned to material vision, that he gives himself in this Virat form so that they can at least start appreciating the Lord from that point of view, because they are covered by ignorance. So to immediately understand the transcendental form becomes very difficult for such persons because of their constant engagement in materialistic demanding activities. Very nice. So this is the problem. So in the Prabhupada quotes Bhagavad Gita 7:24, avyaktam vyaktim apanam manyate mam abhutaya param bhavam ajyato mam avyavyam anuchamam. Unintelligent men who do not know me perfectly think that I, the Supreme Personality of Godhead, Krishna, was impersonal before and have now assumed this personality. Due to their small knowledge, they do not know my higher nature, which is imperishable and supreme. So Krishna is explaining this lack of intelligence due to gross ignorance in materialistic activities results in an impersonal understanding of the Supreme Lord. And when we have this understanding, of course, we cannot even conceive of Krishna's pastimes, what to speak of his tattva, being supreme, being transcendental, although he assumes a human-like form, although he looks like he's touching matter. So it is very difficult to understand. Prabhupada in that purport explains even those who worship the devatas, the demigods, they are also less intelligent. They're less intelligent because they do not take seriously the supremacy of Krishna. They think that the devatas who award material benefits and facilities are the topmost. That Krishna, it's not possible for him to do that. Why? Because they equate or they put Krishna on the same level, sometimes even lower than the demigods. They think Krishna was a very pious person or a powerful kshatriya who sometimes assumed demigod-like tendencies. So they think he was a brave person in Mahabharata. And because of that, they rather approach the demigods like Indra, Chandra, Varuna, Ganesh, they will approach these demigods thinking that they will get their desires fulfilled eternally, not understanding that these administrators of the universe themselves are under the surveillance and guidance of Krishna. And through Krishna's pastime in the Bhagavatam, he shows that when Lord Indra goes off the rails, Krishna, in a very wonderful way, redirects his intelligence to make him understand that actually everything you have is coming from me. When powerful demigods, whether it's even Lord Brahma, thinking how can this cowherd boy be the supreme, gets affected by his vast knowledge. Remember, Brahma is the one who heard all this knowledge for the first time, the most intelligent being in this universe. Still he got contaminated by thinking that he has attained knowledge and the, you know, understanding of the Supreme Person cannot rest in a cowherd boy. But Krishna corrects his behavior, of course. All these actions of pride or envy, they're all results of material contamination, either by the mode of passion and ignorance or mixed with goodness. It is a result of associating with the modes. So they too also forget that the Supreme Lord is supreme. They think because of their post, they have wonderful power, wonderful potency. It becomes difficult for them to actually, at some instances, not all the time, to actually think that the Lord is supreme. So in this sense, Prabhupada mentions that also the devatas, those who worship the demigods, they are seen as less intelligent. So, just to conclude, this understanding or this misconception arises of thinking that the Lord is formless and then he assumes a form. It is wrong. It is not a proper understanding. To the impersonalists, it seems that way because they become blinded by the yogamaya potency of the Lord. And only this blinding effect or this ignorance can only be removed by the supreme will of the Lord. In the Isha Upanishad, of course, the devotee prays for the Lord to remove the dazzling effulgence of the Brahman so that they can actually have darshan, proper realization of the Lord in his personal form. So it is only by the supreme will of the Lord that this misconception of thinking that the Lord was formless and now he has assumed a form just like an ordinary, just like a conditioned soul who assumes different bodies due to contact with matter and due to his relationship with matter. This false conception is removed by the supreme will of the Lord. And it is further removed eternally when one takes the process of devotional service in a loving attitude. In a loving attitude. So we get to understand that by the association of the modes of material nature, we get contaminated. By to get out of that contamination, we must attach ourselves in a loving attitude to pure devotional service. So, karnam guna sangosat sarasra janma yonisu, by contacting the three modes of material nature, we become contaminated. So, to get rid of that contamination, we attach ourselves to something that is free from contamination. That is the process of bhakti. The hierarchy of the different yoga processes is given at the end of chapter 6 of the Bhagavad Gita, how, you know, you have your jnanis, you have your yogis, you have your bhaktas, and even before that you have those who are into the kamakanda version of trying to attain perfection. So even higher than that is those who practice the impersonal understanding, the jnanis. And higher than the jnanis, of course, is the yogis, and higher than the yogis or the mystics is the bhaktas, those who perform devotional service. So it is by this devotional service that this misconception of Krishna having no form, then having to assume a form, it is removed, it is cut off. And Krishna clearly states that in his conversation with Arjuna, when they explain or when they discuss what is Brahman, what is Adideva, what is Adibhutam, what is Adiyagya, that is completely annihilated. And the understanding really of what is Brahman and the relationship between the Brahman and the Parabrahman, it has become given. So, and further on, the ability for anyone to see the Lord is actually by the mercy of the Lord and His devotees. Krishna says that He never manifests to the foolish and unintelligent. He's covered by His internal potency. Krishna doesn't become covered by Maya, He becomes covered by His internal potency. So, the Lord is the maintainer of the universe, and devotional service to Lord Krishna, that is the highest principle of existence. So by devotional service we can actually understand the supreme nature of the Lord, and we can understand who the controller of everyone is. As Lord Brahma here is explaining to Narada Muni, that the supreme Lord is the controller of everyone, including himself. He's also the controller of Brahma, he's the controller of Narada. And in this way, the distinction between the Brahman and the Parabrahman is made, that the one controller is Krishna and all others are his servants. Ekala Ishvara Krishna Ara Sabha Pritya. There's only one Ishvara and that is Krishna. So I'll stop there and I'll ask if there's any comments or questions. All corrections or clarifications. Yes, question after any problem.
In what way do we become in the context of material and moral nature and get entangled?
In what way? How does it happen? How do we get entangled in matter?
Yeah.
Well, the technical way we do that, we'll hear later in the verses. We're going to start hearing about how the modes of passion in the subtle and gross form, how the modes of passion and goodness, due to modal ignorance, display different types of knowledge, etc., and the living entity gets entangled. So for us, when the living entity gets in touch with the three modes of material nature, generally, Prabhupada would quote Prakriti Kriya Manani Guna Kamani Savashaha, that the Ahankar principle, the false conception of self pertaining to the gross or subtle body, that is the beginning of us actually becoming conditioned, accepting that we are matter in a gross or subtle form. And there's different gradations of that. There's different levels people can get into the mode of ignorance, there's different levels that we can get affected by the mode of passion, etc. But from Bhagavad Gita we understand the byproducts of mode of goodness, passion and ignorance. So just the first step is actually by us accepting the false conception of the self, accepting the body or accepting our mind as the self. That is how we become contaminated by the modes of material nature. So according to the different desires we have, Mother Nature provides for us a different type of body, different type of ear, different type of nose, different womb we take birth in. And in that way, we perpetually go from one birth, one body to the other, experiencing the three types of miseries, Adhyatmika, Adibhautika, and Adidevika. So the beginning is accepting the false conception of the self in its gross or subtle matter, in gross or subtle form. Is that clear?
Yeah, it's sort of hard to understand how pure soul can actually do that.
Well, as we've been hearing, the pure soul is marginal. The tattva is that we're marginal. We take shelter of two things, either the internal or the external potency. And because of our independence, we can choose either side. And at this point in time, we have chosen somehow or the other, very foolishly, we've chosen to take shelter of the external energy. Now, it's not that the living entity just says, I want to rebel against Krishna, I want to be supreme. No, it's not in that attitude. The living entity was just thinking, I wonder what it will be like to be in the center. I wonder what it will be like to enjoy like Krishna. That's the beginning of a fall down. And from that, we landed ourselves in this huge mess. The material cosmos is created like a playground. Children sometimes say, we want to play and make castles. Then the parents say, okay, let's go to the beach. There you go. You have the whole beach, make your castles. And then the waters come and, you know, break your castle. You keep trying to manufacture something. I'm the builder. I'm like, Dad, I can do... You know, we try to do so many things. Or the girls, they want to have their own kitchen and their own house and their own children with little prams. All these different things. Okay, the parents say, okay, fine, here you go, go and play. So it is because of our, you know, nonsensical desire to want to be like Krishna that we ended up in the material sphere. To teach us in a very hard way never to think like that. Because wanting to take Krishna's position, we can't do that in Goloka Vrindavan. Because majority of the living entities there understand that Krishna is the only supreme. So for us to want to be like Krishna, we have to go somewhere else. That's the point. Unfortunately, this whole scene called material existence is created because of our nonsensical desires to want to imitate Krishna. To want to say, no, Krishna doesn't have a form, I have a form. Krishna doesn't have his leelas, I have my own leelas. Let's not do Abhishek for Krishna. I'll have my own Abhishek in the morning. I'll have my own, you know, consorts and etc., etc. So it becomes contaminated in a very ugly way. That's how it happens. That's how we landed ourselves in this situation. Any other question? Sorry?
Take this Lord Brahma also sometimes come under this mode of being guidance and sometimes try to challenge this direction. But yeah, our Parampara has a desire from the Brahma. So the lesson we are going to get, that our those the lesson we have created, Parampara has started from Brahma and he himself got corrupted by this.
He got corrupted. Not Brahma got corrupted. Okay, so we are known as the Brahma Madhava Vaishnava Gaudiya Sampradaya. So Lord Brahma is chasing after the external energy. Lord Brahma steals the calves. Lord Brahma gets to the doorkeepers and says, tell Krishna, Brahma is here. And which Brahma? What do you mean which Brahma? You know, Krishna is asking the four-headed one, you know, how can Brahma not know this? Because he is, you know, he's also sometimes referred to as Bhagavan in relation to Krishna. How all his opulences are coming from Krishna, he gets called Brahma, sorry, Bhagavan, and Lord Shiva sometimes. So with these examples of exalted souls, it's not that we should pick out, okay, he was Lord Brahma, he was this person, he was this person, you know, they fell down, what is this business? But for us, even the verse in the Bhagavad Gita says, up, you know, beginning from Lord Brahma down to the insignificant ant, we get affected by the modes of material nature. From Lord Brahma, because remember, he's still in the material cosmos and in the Chaitanya Charitamrita. Somewhere in the Madhya Lila, I've read that, you know, at the end, when it comes to destruction, sometimes, you know, those who are in Brahma Loka will go to the Vaikuntha planets. But it also says, if the Lord Brahma is qualified, remember that Lord Brahma is a post, so it's a certain type of, it's a living entity, it's a post, like you have President Bush, President, or, you know, the President of the United States, Bush, Obama, Reagan, Clinton, the whole lot. So it is a post. So sometimes the living entity who is Lord Brahma is not qualified at the end of the annihilation to go to Vaikuntha Loka. So there's that element. There's the Lord Brahma is an individual. So in the Bhagavatam, these examples, certain pastimes are put in the Bhagavatam to teach us a lesson. That even if you're very, very advanced, even if you're Bharat Maharaj, there's always a slight tinge there's also a slight chance that at any minute the external energy might influence you. But what normally happens, Lord Brahma quickly remembers and then he corrects himself after Krishna plays with him. Lord Indra, he corrected himself. So these pastimes are there to teach us a lesson how to be really careful and serious in devotional service. It is not that all of Brahma's life is like a fall down. Remember how long he lives for? He lives for a very long time. Maybe 3-4 times he kind of forgot things. But the rest of the time he understands he's Krishna's servant. So, personalities like Lord Brahma, Bharat Maharaj, Lord Indra, they have these pastimes where Krishna arranges to teach us living entities a lesson. But we should never think, oh, Indra fell down and Brahma. They are very exalted persons. We shouldn't laugh at them. They are exalted demigods doing service for Krishna, extremely powerful. But sometimes, for the purpose of teaching the rest of those who will read Bhagavatam, we understand the seriousness of how to deal with the material energy and how to think that we can play around. As Prabhupada said, he's praying that he doesn't fall down. Prabhupada won't fall down, but he's teaching us a lesson that, listen, don't think you're so powerful in front of the external energy. Always remember that you're an insignificant servant of Krishna. Take shelter of Krishna's lotus feet. That is the principle behind all these pastimes, that you always go back to Krishna is our shelter. No matter how much potency you have, how much power you get from Krishna, don't think that you can be better than Krishna. So we're in Lord Brahma's line, yes. Everything was revealed through him, through Narada Muni. So many different acharyas have come. So once or twice something happens, exalted devotees have this tendency to be used as instruments by Krishna for a bigger purpose, for a higher purpose. So Lord Brahma is an example, Lord Indra is an example. So we shouldn't take it too seriously. Lord Brahma got affected, and an entire pastime was narrated so that we can read about it and understand. Okay, I've gone over time, sorry. Grantarachana Bhagavatam ki. Shri Prabhupada ki. Shri Prabhupada ki.